there are some students who will act up more for laughs. They'll try and kind of make jokes to each other.
This is Rob, an English teacher in South London.
It can be challenging. I've got one student at the moment, for example, who she'll just spontaneously stand up and just start dancing in front of the class, for example, for no reason at all.
I'm Tish Fielden. You're listening to Tish with Teachers on the Jamie's Farm podcast. In this episode, we're trying to understand the child who diverts the lesson by demanding attention, the child who's a performer, the class clown, or simply loves creating smoke screens that make it impossible to continue teaching.
What I'm finding challenging at the moment is rowdy older students who might try and assert themselves over other students in the class, maybe by being aggressive or trying to act macho and just trying to take away from and divert from the lesson. But in the same class, you've got other students who are looking to annoy other students just to get attention. Maybe they're not so popular. So that's kind of the way that they can get an interaction with someone. And then other students who are maybe less confident, but still are acting in a silly way because they're trying to make their friends laugh and things. And these are things that are happening in the same class, different students, maybe for different reasons.
Sounds tough. You've got a lot of different characters then vying for attention, whilst you're trying to give your attention to all the learners in the class. And I see it's a real balancing act then to find a means of those children who are avoidant of learning. They set up these different smoke screens, they play the class clown or they play to the audience, often because it's a diversion from the anxiety they feel about learning, about they feel anxious that they're not good enough or that they're going to fail or they're going to in some way be shown up. And I think it's really can be irritating as a teacher, but at the same time it's like drawing a breath and thinking, where does this behaviour come from? And my experience when I've had chance to unpeel some of the layers away from that mask and that performance is discovering that those are often the very children who haven't had the reassurance, the positive attention, the sense of well-being in home or in the peer group. And they're quite demanding and awkward in the way that they play to the crowd, but the crowd also give them back reinforcement to carry on, because for those other children in the class who aren't extroverts, of course, this is a diversion that suits them too, if it takes them away from the task of concentrating and facing something which is more challenging, which is the task in hand. So I really feel for you, Rob, because you've got quite a good mixture of them going there. So maybe we can think together a bit about how to get beneath the defence, beneath the mask, beneath the performer, back to the real child, the person who is maybe also craving something else. They don't know how to ask for it, which is a kind of really quality positive attention.
Absolutely. I think it's interesting that you're talking about the balance of extroverts and introverts, because it's almost like everyone just falls into their role and everyone's kind of happy with it in some cases. If you have one student who's happy to call out, entertain and perform for everyone, some people don't have a problem with that, and it can be, you know, easy for other students to accept that. And sometimes even it can be easy as a teacher to accept that if it's bringing some energy to the class.
Especially if you've got you're faced with either that or a kind of stony-faced, disinterested children. So yes, unconsciously we kind of buy into it too as teachers, I think. But I think it's It's also remembering that somewhere we've got to go with the flow rather than completely against it, insofar as those teenagers' brains are wired for peer approval more than adult approval. And they're very short term in their thinking. It's the here and now that interests them. It's the reaction they can get now. And they often go for shock behaviour. So they're taking risks. And that's the other part of their brain, is that they need risk. And of course, this is a kind of, in their world, a managed risk. It's not actually too dangerous for them. It's not going to result in them really hurting themselves or other people. So they're risking sanctions, they're risking your approbation, they're risking, you know, whatever comes by the way of disapproval from potentially the teacher's side, but they're gaining exactly what they need as a place in the peer group. And that's a drug to these children, and especially a child who's underconfident. I think it's, for me, going back to why this, why now? Why does a behaviour come? Where's it coming from? And how can I help that child to find a more authentic self where their vulnerability and their fragility isn't something that needs to be hidden? Because they're often like comedians we see on stage. Some of the best comedians in this country, when they're off stage, admit they're quite depressed and anxious people. And this is a great performance to mask that when they're up on stage.
Absolutely. I think it's interesting the way you're talking about what the student's looking for is that peer approval. Because as a teacher, if you're using carrot and stick methods to try and motivate, sanctions, or even just generic praise, it's not going to work if the student is not necessarily worried by that or motivated by that. And so you can feel at a loss if you're just using these generic strategies. But I think maybe what you're suggesting is taking a step back and thinking about it from a different angle, maybe.
Yes, I think that's a really good point you've made. I think that, you know, the best made plans fall foul often in a classroom where you've got a great teaching plan, you've got a great idea for the day, and then somehow it's sabotaged by these children. And I think rather than getting annoyed or irritated or shaming them, I think one of the things is to try and reframe the behaviour. So that is to use the part of the child that likes being the joker or the comedian or the performer in a positive way. So you can actually say, do you know, you'd be brilliant as a stand-up comic because you're quick and you're intelligent. And I'd much rather work with you than against you. So you kind of get alongside a child. So you change sides instead of it being them and us. I think you need to think in your classroom generally in advance, how can you use that energy, that quality to the purpose of the greater good? So it could be you say, I really like your confidence and you're great at being able to get groups. So I'm going to put everyone into groups and I would like to have you in the group of people. Could you use that energy you've got to help motivate some of the people who are less confident than you are? So you don't denigrate the quality, but you give them a place to show the opposite quality, which is nurture, compassion, interest in other people. And I think doing a lot of breaking down the class into teams is a way forward to break this them and us feeling. It's a very helpful thing to help those children find another version of themselves so that you're not getting them to play to those other children who are also using this distraction. You're grouping them with the children where they have to play another role, because their permanent class clown is not going to wash with children who aren't giggling at them and giving them the reception that they want.
Yeah, I think taking a student out of that format where it's the teacher and the students and putting them into groups would give them an opportunity to not be the performer all the time, or not feel like they have to be the performer all the time, and maybe might make them start to think about the other students in the class more as individuals and less as a kind of crowd or an audience. And then in doing so, like you say, you're kind of humanizing the student there and asking whether they're happy playing that role in the first place.
Yeah, I think that's brilliant. And you're breaking down a kind of culture there, which is the one they expect is the authority from the teacher, and that they're there to kind of play with that authority or the authority of the school. So I think you always have to sidestep getting into those oppositional roles. It's like fencing, and move around to be on the same side. And I think another thing is... having the conversations, you know, for yourself as an English teacher, this is great, but I think other class teachers can take time for this. To have conversations in classes about how all of us protect that more vulnerable, fragile self. And let's look at how characters develop and personas and become the mask. So you can use examples of soap operas, and you can use the... you know, some of the dramas that they're watching, where you see how through TV and through films, there is always another side to someone. So you can get people imagining what are the more hidden qualities in themselves, what are the bits that they are less likely to show. And then you can pursue some of the lines if you do one-to-one work with children or have conversations outside the school. I'm curious about that, because clearly it has worked for you to need to hide that part of yourself. I'm wondering if those other parts of you ever get seen. And so you are showing, as a relational teacher, as a human being who cares, that you care about the whole child, not just the child who shows up and either learns or doesn't learn, or either, you know, falls in line or steps outside of it.
Yeah, and I think people talk about developing relationships a lot, and sometimes people can just pay lip service to the idea, because I know it can be really tempting to look for opportunities, or not look for opportunities to, but find a solution to a problem being that you will just assert your authority or reassert your authority, not think of the whole child. But I think sometimes sometimes teachers, myself included, would wonder, how do you have that one-on-one conversation with the students?
I think it's really interesting that you mention about, you know, asserting your authority, because I think children invite us into a power struggle. And whilst we need to have clear boundaries, and they respect teachers who are quite kind of... firm, I would say, rather than strict, but are clear and have a really good clear sense of their own self-preservation. I think at the same token, being human and interested and curious about a child is so important. So taking a child, you know, just asking them to help you carry the books, or taking them aside, you know, starting always with a compliment, you know, like, I heard great things about you. You did really well in the football, or so-and-so was talking about you in the staff room. And children are just delighted if they hear that somebody else is saying something positive about them. And you can then, you can have that sort of more musing out loud, thinking together conversation about, like, you know, like, I noticed that you're finding it harder to concentrate at times, and I'm wondering if, you know, the distraction is because it's the stuff that's still quite tough in what we're doing or learning, or you could start with affirming them, like, you know, you're clearly really popular. But I guess sometimes it's quite hard once you've got a role of being the person who the entertainer, to step down from that role and find the other parts of yourself. So when we talk about parts of a child, we honour that, we recognise that they are able to function from different places. And what I think we're trying to do is encourage them to feel that you see them. That is the thing they tell me at Jamie's Farm. Children want to be understood. That's what they yearn for. And you can start a conversation with, I'd really like to understand, because I can see that you are firing on all cylinders. It's hard work, you know, being that person, the popular person, but the person who the others look to. And I'm wondering if sometimes that is a bit exhausting, and what gets missed out. So I think the one-to-one conversation is a kind of thinking out loud, but showing you're on their side and giving space for them to answer or not answer as they choose. Because don't underestimate that you're showing an interest in a child and your acknowledgement of the whole child is something that they will take in and they won't forget. They may not meet you eye to eye and start talking. They're not going to necessarily show you in their behaviour what it's meant, but it is in retrospect that they often mention those things. I notice at the farm that they will mention how they felt that a teacher really got them or cared about them or bothered about them or was willing to go the extra mile. But I don't think those teachers themselves would always know that. So we can't, as adults, we can't look for the reward.
No, it's true. And I think it's interesting in talking about these conversations you have with students. It's quite similar. It's a big theme that comes across in your book as well, is almost looking past that self-defense mechanism or whatever the student is trying to do to cover something up. And it's easy to forget. It's easy to forget that when you do have a breakthrough with a student, and you maybe do have a conversation and learn something about them, that that breakthrough actually enables them to feel safe and accepted. And I think that does enable them to have success too. So, for example, I had a student in year 9, and he's extremely disengaged, and he will call out and sometimes try and intimidate other students just to try and, I don't know, get a reaction. And one time I ended up talking to him because he wasn't doing any work, and he mentioned that he likes cooking, and I had a conversation with him about cooking, which was completely random. And then later in the lesson he did more work than I've ever seen, and it wasn't a strategy I was using. I just had a conversation with him about cooking, and maybe it's like you say, and maybe that meant something to him.
Yeah, I think that's a lovely example, because you were just being authentic and you picked up on where he had an interest, and we don't know where that interest is, and it wasn't patronising, it was genuine. And it's seeing that he exists beyond this classroom, beyond the uniform, beyond being the needle in the haystack, beyond being just one of 30 kids or one of 2,000 in a school. And that's exactly it. Those we don't know what they're interested in, but us being interested in what that could be and what that means to them, and showing that we have something to learn from them. Because I think that there is a danger with social media, and the kids feel they have to be shocking and outrageous now in order to get prime time or to get attention. And I think it is those very ordinary little moments, though, that feed them, and they do know the difference. And when I listen to children reflecting on their experience of a good teacher, a good relationship, it's so heartening. They have such an intrinsic sense of a moral compass, most children, of what is good and bad, what is appropriate, what's inappropriate. And their behaviour is not going to tell us that. It's only when we get alongside them, listen to them, care about them, communicate with them, that we discover their intrinsic wisdom. I mean, they blow me away.
Yeah, of course. Their kids are amazing when you talk to them. But as a teacher, you rarely see that side, because you only see one side of them in that classroom if you don't give them the opportunity to show you another side of them.
Yeah. So maybe, Rob, what we're talking about is sometimes I think beyond teaching the curriculum, beyond achieving what we're trying to achieve, in terms of their learning goals, we have to set aside time in our classrooms to have this more relational context where it's about them as human beings, how they treat each other, how we treat them. And I think that is going to be a way forward to help children, particularly where we are now, where they are so vulnerable from not some of them having any adult support at home, and they will isolate themselves more and more if they only perform at school. These are very vulnerable children, the performers.
Yeah, I agree with that. You brought up social media and the amount of time that students spend on their phones, free from any supervision probably, would just astound you. I mean, I, for some reason, was asking them how much time they spent on their phones, and I'd had a particularly bad day where I'd spent something ridiculous like 8 hours on my phone. So the class gasped, they're completely shocked by this. And the reason they're shocked is because 8 hours to them is nothing. They are surprised that I spent 8 hours on my phone, because that is a short amount of time for them. Because some of them are spending, honestly, 13 to 17 hours on their phone a day. How that's possible, I don't know. But combined with everything that's going on at the moment, this must be a big influence in their lives.
Oh, I think you're completely right, Rob. I think it's really worrying because, for one, they're not getting enough sleep, which we know is essential to their health at every level, their mental health, physical health. We know that it means that their attention span is getting shorter because they're constantly wanting a kind of immediate feedback loop. So when you bring children into the classroom and give them a task that requires concentration, for some of them it's a bit like a memory muscle, or that they've simply, it's wasted and atrophied in this past year. And I think that feeling that you have to be someone on social media, that you have to popularise yourself, that you have to produce yourself, is really quite upsetting to me, because it is that the child has to have a performance personality rather than an authentic self. And they may, many of them, be forgetting, almost have lost the ability to know what it's like to receive a kind of heartfelt, easygoing, peaceful way of being with each other, because it's all very, very adrenaline driven with the boys. There's a lot of gaming and they're on their phones, and with the girls there's this huge amount of stuff going on about image, and we know that their body dysmorphia is just accelerated, the number of girls with eating disorders, but talking about suicide, everything has become extreme. And it's as if we're now inheriting a generation back into the classroom after COVID, but it's been creeping up with the availability of social media to children, that some of the normal regulators of human relationships have been missing. And I think when you have that child who's in actually basically lacking in confidence, but can do walk the walk and talk the talk, it's a bit like they have whole swathes of them that remain unseen, and the more unseen they are, the less accessible it becomes to them in relationships. So I think going back into the classroom, talking about what we were about, sort of having kids in groups, having them in feedback groups where they give each other honest feedback, where they talk about what it's like to be with each other, when they talk about the kind of impact they have on each other, when they talk about the different sides of themselves, I think we need to be doing that kind of work in every classroom that's about self-awareness, about well-being, and about communication and confidence.
Completely. It's like everything's pointing to the same thing here, isn't it? And this idea of persona that teenagers feel like they have to live up to. It's a difficult time. I actually feel really sorry for them trying to figure out who they are. And like you say, we've got to do whatever we can to find the authentic person and do what we can to facilitate that.
Well, thank you, Rob. It's been great talking to you, listening to you, learning from you.
Likewise.
I hope that we get to do this again.
Me too. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you.
I've also really enjoyed talking to these teachers in this series. It reinforces for me what amazing people there are out there in this profession. If we can support them to be at their best, it makes me very hopeful for the children they're working with. If you found these conversations helpful, please pass them on to others and leave a review. And do subscribe to the Jamie's Farm podcast so you can listen to our next series, where I'll be talking to educators about how we can work together to best prepare children for their futures. I hope you can join me then. Goodbye.